Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Oh, yeah. Started to burn too many things we found. That's the Divine Darwinian singing, as usual, with Pete Seeger, the legend, and David Burns, who wrote the lyrics to the song, except for Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back for another hour here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. Wow, do we have stuff to cover. Nancy Pelosi finally got off the pot and is going to proceed with impeachment. I hope they don't just do the Ukrainian stuff. And I got two great guests to talk about it. Political science professor and legal eagle Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator for many years. Bob, you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
You are there in the heart of the heartland. And Kevin Camps of the Beyond Nuclear Organization, one of the great mainstays of the anti-nuclear movement for the past three or four centuries. Kevin, glad to have you aboard. You with us?
Thank you, Harvey. Yes, good to be here.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about impeachment, which everybody wants to talk about. It's rolling right along, and we are thrilled. The only bad news about it is this focus on Ukraine has given Joe Biden a bump, which is pretty off the wall, actually. I mean, the bottom line is, no matter what happens to Trump, if the Democrats nominate Joe Biden, they will lose. I mean, he's got loser written all over him. He should be on a park bench feeding pigeons. But I do want to, and we will get into it in great depth as we roll along, but I do want to start here with Ohio. Astonishing things are happening in Ohio. Absolutely astounding. Kevin, you want to start off and tell us what's going on here with this referendum on the nuclear plant. The First Energy, probably the biggest mafia utility operation in the country, pushed through a bailout for their two reactors on Lake Erie, and also for two coal-burning power plants. It has not gone over well. There has been a major push to rescind it by referendum, but all sorts of things have been happening. So, Kevin, can you fill us in on what's going on? I mean, it's truly a staggering story, and then, Bob, you'll jump in.
Yeah, so the pro-bailout, and it's a $1.1 billion bailout, $900 million of which would go to the Davis-Bessey atomic reactor and the Perry atomic reactor, and much of the rest would go to a coal plant in Ohio and another one in Indiana, if you can believe that. Ohio electric consumers bailing out an Indiana coal plant on their electric bills. So over $1 billion, and the pro-bailout side has really taken the gloves off and are behaving very shamefully. So just a few examples. Very deceptive flyers and TV ads and radio ads that essentially are anti-Asian racist ads. What they're claiming is that people who are against the bailout must be agents of Red China, and the Red China Army is marching on Ohio, and they're going to take over the electric.
Say that again. Kevin, say that again. Say that one more time so that people really understood.
The TV ad is really absurd, but it's to scare people, and they say things, and they've done this with the flyer that's been sent across the state as well to households. It says, be careful if you sign this petition to put this on the ballot in November 2020, because China will then have your name and your address and will do nefarious things, and you should call this hotline and let us know if there are people gathering petitions in your neighborhood so that we can send our blockers out there to harass and intimidate them. It's really incredible what they're doing. And they've a few more examples would be they've created an unofficial petition, and they're sending their own pro-bailout canvassers door-to-door to confuse and muddy the waters. So there's now an unofficial petition that the other side is pushing, and they are harassing, they are intimidating, and in one case, they even physically assaulted a petition gatherer. So that's some of what's going on. First Energy Nuclear itself is challenging the petition.
Kevin, before you jump ahead, tell us about this fake petition. Does the petition that they're circulating, the anti-clean energy people, the pro-nuclear people, the petition that they're circulating, does it give the impression that it supports the anti-nuclear referendum?
It goes along the lines of the China TV ad. So the problem is that people are going to get confused that there's multiple petitions going on, and it's pretty clear that they have launched this unofficial petition, which I've only scanned. I'm not really up to speed on it. People are going to get confused and think when a petition is given to them, they better read it carefully because they might think they're putting the question on the ballot because they're anti-bailout, but in fact, they're signing a pro-bailout petition. But it's unofficial, so it's really just to confuse people.
Unbelievable. Bob, you're in Columbus. Have you seen any of these multiple petitions?
Yeah, they were at Columbus State this week, where you used to teach, RV, and where I teach. So the unofficial petitions. It's going to cause great confusion that you're signing a petition that it really isn't a certified petition. So when somebody asks you about the certified petition, you may say, I already signed it.
Well, what is the fake petition say? They're circulating a petition. Is it meant to give you the impression that you're signing this petition in support of the anti-bailout referendum?
It is written from what I could see, and I haven't read all the language. It seems to imply that, it's the petition for, energy in Ohio. So it's, and again, it's got a little disclaimer at the bottom, but you'd have to read all the way through. And again, the question is whether or not they're telling people. The news reports were that they weren't telling people. It's not the certified petition.
So let's summarize here, because this is really unprecedented. I've never heard of this, and I don't think you guys have, in terms of a referendum drive. We've got the Ohio legislature has passed AB6, which bails out the two atomic plants and the two coal burners. The opponents, this is a shady group as well, we don't know who they are, but the opponents are circulating a petition to repeal by popular vote, a referendum in 2020, this AB6 bailout. Now, the opponents, the proponents, the supporters of the nuclear bailout, number one, have put people in the field called blockers to intimidate signature gatherers for the people who are gathering signatures for the anti-nuclear referendum. There's an intimidation thing going on, and we've already had one instance, at least, where a signature gatherer for the anti-nuclear petition was physically assaulted, right?
That on video, a security camera caught the whole incident, and I think charges are being pressed against the person who struck the petition gatherer.
But what about the organization? I mean, is there liability as the organization that put this person out there being prosecuted? I mean, it's one thing to prosecute this blocker who attacked the signature gatherer and broke his cell phone. It's another thing to let the organization continue to do this. I mean, someone should file suit against this organization, a class action or some kind of personal injury lawsuit. Against an organization that's out there physically intimidating signature gatherers? I mean, it's astounding.
Okay. Harvey, I actually have the language from the fake petition if you'd like me to read it. It's in a Cleveland Plain Dealer article. It's pretty short.
Okay, so then the second thing they're doing is that the pro-nuclear people are circulating a fake petition to confuse people about whether they're signing the petition to put this thing on the ballot to repeal the bailout. So, Kevin,
Ohioans for Energy Security. And some of the language is that, quote, immediately enact legislation. And it goes on to say to prohibit any foreign national company or government from holding a majority stake in electric generation, supply or distribution.
Kevin has the actual language. So let's hear the actual language of
it. Yeah, I'll read it real quick. At the very top, it says, stop foreign ownership of our electric grid. And below that, it says, we, the people of Ohio, in order to protect our electric grid and essential electrical service from interference by foreign governments and foreign interests, hereby petition the Ohio General Assembly to immediately enact legislation providing that specifies no franchise permit, license, or right to own, operate, manage, or control any electric generation, supply, or distribution company shall be granted or transferred to any entity a majority of whose ownership or control is held by any foreign, national, non-United States corporation or entity or foreign government. And it goes on from there. So it's kind of a straw man.
How much longer is it? What else do they say?
A little bit more. It's existing language of RC 4905.62 dealing with the Public Utility Commission of Ohio that the above could be added. And there's another box that I can read part of. Franchise permit, license, or right to own, operate, manage, or control any public utility which is an electric light company, gas company, public works company, sewage disposal system company, or heating and cooling company shall be granted or transferred to any corporation incorporated under the laws of this state. And then it asks for your name, signature, address, city, state. And this is the petition that the pro-nuclear bailout people are circulating.
So the pro-nuclear bailout people are circulating this insane petition to confuse people so that they won't sign the anti-nuclear referendum petition. My understanding, by the way, Bob, you may know, or Kevin, is that there actually is over $100 million of Chinese money invested in First Energy. Have you heard that or seen that?
I have, yeah. And that's what's so ironic is the very allegation the pro-nuclear bailout folks are making against the anti-forces, and part of the anti-bailout forces, full disclosure, is the natural gas industry to some extent because they don't like the unfair competitive advantage that this bailout is giving to nuclear and coal. So yeah, some of their money is flowing into this anti-bailout petition drive. And yes, they do get some financing from China. But like you're saying, Harvey, so does First Energy Nuclear. So the hypocrisy is incredible.
So there's over $100 million in Chinese money invested in the First Energy Nuclear Corporation.
And, you know, the investments also come from France and Germany and Great Britain into the natural gas plant. So it's not like China is the only investor. It's called, you know, capitalism in the year 2019.
Okay. So, Bob, as an attorney, what do you see any vulnerability here that people could take legal action against this, pro-nuclear operation here doing everything it can to muddy the waters?
Well, the Ohioans for Energy Security, and their spokesperson, Mr. Laparo, are pointing out that they don't reference any real bills at all in their legislation and that it's covered by free speech in the First Amendment. And their argument, and I think it's fairly strong, is that they have a right to educate through their non-certified petition.
Okay. So basically, now, are they also challenging the legality of the petition against the AB 6? Have they gone to court yet on that?
House Bill 6, HB 6. First Energy is legally challenging the petition, saying you can't revoke a tax. And that's what's so incredible is the majority of Republicans who voted for this bailout, of course, are anti-tax, small government Republicans. And now First Energy is saying, no, this is a tax. But it's not a tax because it didn't go through the tax committee of the state legislature. It's not a tax. It's a surcharge on your electric bill. It's not a tax. But that's their legal argument.
So are they in court now challenging this thing?
I'm not entirely sure myself if they're in court.
Bob,
I think they have taken steps.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen any major news saying that they were in court yet. But oddly, by using the tax argument, it was the same one that Obamacare, or Affordable Care Act, was passed on by 5-4 with Roberts switching side, claiming that it was a tax. Now, you know, I don't see how this is a tax because no specific tax was levied.
Do they have a fallback on this? Is there another one they're going to try and use? I mean, they're really desperate here. I got to say,
I think the desperation is in the confusion with the non-certified petition and these relentless, you know, sort of communist party-themed ads that they've been running nonstop, which I think, you know, led to, some of the attacks.
And wow, the ed boards in Ohio have done really good work on this. They pointed out that, of course, this is thinly veiled racism against Asians, for one thing, and it could only have worked, and the reason they chose to make such an absurd argument right now is because Trump has whipped up anti-China sentiment in this country. So First Energy and other pro-nuclear forces in Ohio are taking full advantage of this anti-China rhetoric that Trump has launched.
Mind-boggling. We're talking with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear and Bob Petrakis of the Columbus Free Press and freepress.org in Central Ohio. This is really new territory here in terms of referenda. I don't recall through all the years ever hearing of an organization hiring people to go out and harass signature gatherers. Have you, Bob? I mean, you know, we've been activists for a long time. I've never heard of this.
Well, no. I mean, this one's real interesting because it's like a resolution of sentiment. Carlo Leparo, the spokesperson for Ohioans for Energy Security, is saying that all they're doing is, quote, that it shows grassroots support for a new law, end quote. And he's denying absolutely that there's any attempt to hurt the opposition's effort to collect, you know, the roughly 266,000 signatures that are needed. But clearly both those statements are false.
My God. I mean, this is really mind-boggling.
They're hiring so many canvassers to do the fake petition that they're making it hard for the real petition to hire people.
That's a great point. I mean, they're for a resolution of sentiment that's not certified. I have never heard somebody hiring people for a non-certified, you know, petition.
So basically, these guys are spending all the money that they possibly can, which they'll write off their taxes and charge to the ratepayers, to prevent this petition against the bailout from going ahead. But now, one thing,
huge expenditures for advertising on TV, radio, and these flyers they're sending out. They are spending big money to try to protect their billion-dollar bailout, and we don't know where the money's coming from. It's dark money, and groups like League of Women Voters in Ohio and Common Cause Ohio have pointed that out. That this is outrageous. They're calling for transparency and sunshine.
All right, so on the other side, now we don't really know much about the group that's pushing the petition against the bailout. I mean, who are these people, and why have they not enlisted the environmental movement?
Well, they're called Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts, if I have the name correct. And certainly there is natural gas interests involved. There's a natural gas plant in Lordstown, which announced that it will not be going through with an expansion. I mean, you know, I'm no fan of natural gas. I'm no fan of fracking. But this natural gas company has announced that its expansion of the natural gas plant is now suspended or canceled, which means a loss of jobs in that sector, a loss of tax revenues in that area. And what's so ironic about that is, you know, the whole argument of First Energy Nuclear is protecting Ohio jobs in the energy sector. Well, their bailout has cost jobs already. And as we've talked about in the past, Harvey, imagine the job losses going on because wind has been sabotaged in Ohio, and effectively solar, too, and energy efficiency.
God, it's mind-boggling. But here's something that's bothersome. Maybe, Bob, you can speak to this being in Columbus. There seems to be no outreach from the anti-nuclear petition organization to the Sierra Club or other left and environmental groups to help with the petition gathering. Is that still true?
Yeah, well, you know, it's considered whoever the dark money is. It looks like, you know, big oil and gas versus First Energy and nukes. I mean, this is in no way are the, you know, typical grassroots environmental activists involved on either side. You know, it's the first mass petitioning I've seen where you don't have the, you know, standard activists that petition for the environmental movement involved. And again, I'm not even picking up Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts. You'd think you'd see some well-known libertarians out there, but we haven't been seeing that either, which, again, this looks like, you know, oil and gas versus nukes.
Well, I will,
so
I will
when is
and just say that Sierra Club of Ohio is supportive of this petition gathering, and I think involved. I think they have people who are taking part, trying to anyway, take part in the gathering of petition signatures, because, you know, they are against the nuclear plants being bailed out, and they're certainly against the coal plants being bailed out as well. And then you've got, I know, an individual, Joe DeMar, who is a Green Party member in Ohio. He's been very active in the Davis-Bessie shutdown campaign, and I know that he's gathering petition signatures too. So there is some environmental involvement. It should be a lot more than it is. And remember that the bailout also included a sprinkling of money, not much money, for some solar projects that were already happening. So they tried to buy off, and did buy off, some Democratic votes in the state legislature with this small amount of money for solar, while at the same time gutting Ohio's renewable portfolio standard.
Man, this is really sinister. I mean, this is really, really dark.
There's agreement that the bill is going to gut the state renewable energy and energy efficient standards for utilities.
Right. Wow. I mean, is there anything to add here? I mean, this is really a mind-boggling miasma here. It's really, really ugly. And,
well, I mean,
I don't know.
The fact that First Energy, you know, leaned on its workers probably heavily to lobby the legislature to get the bailout passed, and they succeeded in that. And before the ink was dry on House Bill 6, they turned around in bankruptcy court and said to the judge, "We can't pay our workers' pensions, Your Honor. We need to be relieved of that burden." So the backstabbing of First Energy against its own workforce is pretty remarkable.
Well, I hope those guys respond and, you know, and fight back on this.
You know, one example of the workforce at Davis Bessie fighting back some time ago, some months or even years ago, was when First Energy, again in bankruptcy court, tried to get approved bonuses for management across the board, but not for the workers, not for the non-management workers. And I think the workers were able to stop that. So the bonuses got paid to everybody, not just to the management.
Right. And now here we have this plant, you know, in Lordstown, this auto factory, which has been gutted and is standing there empty. And you have this giant possibility of bringing in wind power into the North Coast. And nobody's talking about that. I mean, it's just total psychosis here. Mind-boggling to me. All right, anything you guys want to add on this situation here? I do want to jump in.
I did want to mention that the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, is anti-nuclear bailout, and it's because, again, they're, you know, free market capitalists, supposedly. So it's an interesting, you know, as we've already talked about, cast of characters. You've got environmentalists, renewable energy companies, the Koch brothers, the natural gas industry on one side of this fight, and then you've got nuclear and coal on the other side.
It's like the battle of the dinosaurs here.
And there are some labor unions supporting the nuclear power advocates.
Yeah.
Right, but what about, are there any, have any unions at all, has any labor at all come out for solar and all this?
I don't know.
See, yeah, no, I haven't heard labor on the other side. I mean, but it is correct that there are environmental groups. And there are actually a few libertarians and small government activists on the side, you know, against the bailout.
And are they gathering signatures?
One of the things is that this was a, you know, whoever's behind the effort, usually there's a progressive organization that does all of this. For the progressive side, and they're on the sidelines. You know, usually these things run, you know, $3-4 million. So it's not the usual people doing this from the progressive side. It doesn't mean, that there's not people that are signing up that are opposed to this, because it is correct, Joe DeMar. You know, was speaking at rallies and doing a variety of things. It's just that the usual names of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of the usual activist petitioners, that organization doesn't seem to be in. And I think that's why the movement to hire as many of these petitioners who aren't as sophisticated is happening. Well, that's why they're being hired for a non-certified resolution, essentially a senator.
Man, when is the deadline for the petitions to be submitted?
I think it's around October 21st, something like that.
All right, so there's still 3-4 weeks to go. Man,
part of the dynamic too is with that intimidation and harassment. That is not real conducive to having environmental volunteers involved, because guess what? It's intimidating and harassing, you know? So, and it's not just the petition gatherers who are being harassed and intimidated. It's the public. Like, you know, when there's fisticuffs, do you think people are going to come over and sign your petition?
Amazing. Well, something's got to be done here. I mean, this is, and we need like 250,000 signatures, right?
Yeah,
roughly 266,000 valid So usually they'll go at least twice that.
Wow, amazing. Now, one thing we got to remember here is that this has major implications for the presidential election. Because if this anti-nuclear ballot issue is on the vote, and there's no doubt that the majority of the public in Ohio is going to oppose this, oppose the bailout and support the referendum. And that will definitely contribute to a liberal Democrat green turnout in the 2020 presidential election. And I'm sure that the Trump people are well aware of that. And, Trump 2020 did
already weighed in on this issue before the legislature. They were Trump 2020 campaign manager. I don't recall his name, in Ohio, was calling state legislators before the HB 6 passage, urging them to pass this bailout, because if these nuke plants close in Ohio, it's going to hurt Trump's reelection chances. My question is, how is that not an undeclared, campaign contribution, at least in kind? The legality of those phone calls, I'm not real clear on, because I'm sure they didn't declare them as a campaign contribution for Trump 2020.
Marching Maoist throwbacks in the China commercials. The firm Media Buying said 9.5 million was spent on broadcast ads to win the legislative passing of the bailout, and that they've spent at least another 3.5 million on these anti-Chinese radio and TV ads, which will help Trump. And again, this doesn't count the tens of thousands of dollars, it looks like hundreds of thousands in mailers that keep showing up with the same China theme, nor does it count the new petitioners or the petition blockers. So, I mean, you're really looking at a $15, $20 million effort as of right now.
God!
Not even on the ballot yet. Wait till it gets on the ballot and think how much money they're going to spend.
We got to write this up. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. I mean, if we wrote a scenario up like this, that people would not believe it. This is truly astounding. All right, listen, I wanted to move on a little bit here. I just read yesterday the Time magazine article on the future of the planet and saving the climate crisis, and the centerpiece article is by Bill McKibben. And in it, Bill McKibben says that there has to be compromise by the anti-nuclear movement, and that we have to accept the idea that reactors that are online should continue to operate beyond their license years. I mean, I want to write a piece to Bill McKibben, and the Bill McKibben's nuclear madness. I mean, Kevin, you want to comment on that?
Just the irony for me is that I just stood with 350.org at the Shutdown DC Climate Action a couple days ago. 200 of us shut a major intersection. We were 200 of 2,000 people who had 22 different road blockades in D.C. for the climate, and I stood with 350.org. And another irony of McKibben's Time piece there is he mentions thorium reactors as a potential, climate mitigation. What's insane about that is, how much money is going to be wasted on that, for one thing, that could go to actual solutions to the climate crisis? And another irony is thorium is a pathway to nuclear weapons. You convert thorium-232 to uranium-233, you can use that uranium-233 for nuclear weapons. So if thorium reactors spread internationally, we may have to worry about nuclear winter, a different direction of climate change, if there's a nuclear war because of the weapons that come out of that.
It's amazing. And Bill McKibben should know better after all this. And, he's clearly listened to this clique of high-tech, whoever they are, Bill Gates and all that stuff. Bill Gates, by the way, has thrown in the towel. He worked with Bush on a core curriculum for, you know, the country that was his big educational outreach. And he has at least, you know, given credit, has come forward and said it's a failure. And I wish he'd get it off it on nuclear power as well. I mean, he still wants to fund, apparently, small-scale new nuclear plants, which is utterly insane. He's also, by the way, backing underground sequestration of carbon dioxide, which is completely nuts. I mean, you know, there's a really great device to sequester carbon dioxide. It's a four-letter word. It's called tree. And then there's another four-letter word called hemp. I mean, these guys want to really sequester carbon dioxide. You know, they need to plant a trillion trees and a million acres of hemp, and we'll be on our way. It's unreal. Okay, so that much said, we got 20 minutes left. Let's talk about what everybody wants to talk about, which is impeachment. Now, Bob, it's ironic that this latest pathway to impeachment, not that there weren't others before, but the one that seems to have been be breaking the camel's back here, or at least Nancy Pelosi's, comes from Ukraine. Now, you've done a tremendous amount of research on Paul Manafort and all the other stuff that's gone on in Ukraine. So can you give us some background on this? I mean, you know, Trump is just lives in another world. I read that. I don't think they're not releasing yet the actual transcript. I don't think they're releasing a summary of the transcript. Same thing they did with the Mueller report. But Bob, excuse me, what can you tell us about Ukraine and Donald Trump and Paul Manafort?
Well, you know, it's if you look back far enough, James Baker guaranteed the Russians that we wouldn't be moving an inch into the former Eastern Bloc. And, you know, we've moved hundreds and hundreds of miles. And Ukraine was the grand prize there, right? The U.S. Was involved in a coup that overthrew an elected, you know, pro-Russian Ukrainian leader who had worked with Manafort and earlier people like Michael Connell, right? They so they brought in kind of the, you know, the first time they kind of rigged the election in 2004 for the pro-Russian, and then they adopted sort of new tactics, more populist tactics, and they won. And then the U.S. was involved in overthrowing that government. And then as a result of that, right, you had the Soviets move into Crimea and eastern Ukraine, which, by the way, were part of the Ukraine, were part of Russia up until 57 when Khrushchev, who was Ukrainian, gave it to the Ukrainian, you know, Soviet Socialist Republic. So you've got this very strange history, and the move was to get Ukraine into the European Union, and also, as we've done in the Baltic states, to make it part of NATO. And again, it's where Putin drew the line. But then the great irony here looks like you've got essentially Trump holding up military aid, the $250 million in aid scheduled for the Ukraine, and because he wanted them to do things, right? So the Ukrainians countered with they wanted a meeting with their leader and Trump. And again, that's something we shouldn't overlook, because Trump's also, he was with Modi holding hands, right, the Hindu nationalist ruler of India. And recently, right, he was wandering America with the Australian prime minister doing the same thing. So everything is the constant campaign with Trump, and his tactics are ruthless and illegal. He's acting, you know, as an agent of foreign governments. And in part, this is why he had some of the fallout with Bolton for holding up the Ukrainian money, because Bolton was such a hardline neocon going against, you know, Russia, and also wanting action in Iran and Venezuela.
So this guy that Trump asked for the information on Biden from, is he Putin's guy or is he anti-Putin?
No, he's not Putin's guy. If I'm not mistaken, I thought he was, you know, a comedian. He's not Putin's guy. He was kind of the, you know, curse on both your houses. Let's bring in an outsider who's funny. Sort of one of those moves that happens in countries that are polarized. But Trump, who is pro-Putin, was holding up the money because he wanted him to do, you know, reconnoitering and espionage in the American election against Biden's son.
Yeah, the only bad thing about this is that it's given a boost to Biden, which is really, as mentioned, is really disturbing to me. Bob, as an attorney and a constitutional expert, do you believe that this particular incident rises to the level of an impeachable offense?
Absolutely, right? A lot of stuff that was illegal happened before he was president with, you know, anyone out there should Google or do a search on simply Trump and money laundering. Last time I looked, there were, you know, 3-4 million hits. Every major business news organization practically in the world, but it really in the U.S., Forbes, etc., Business Insider, have all written extensive pieces on Trump's money laundering. So the notion of high crime implies a crime you committed while in office. So if you're essentially holding up money allocated, you know, and agreed upon to the military because you want another foreign country to spy for you, to the point that you've got a intelligence agency whistleblower, you know, going public, really it's unprecedented, and it's exactly what impeachment was created for. I mean, essentially, he's betraying the country and its policies based on him trying to get information, you know, on a presidential rival's son so he can use it politically.
God. I mean, again, it's staggering. And there is an Ohio connection here, right? Can you talk about that?
Oh, the which one were you referring to?
Well, take your pick in Ukraine, Manafort.
In 2004, when you and I and many others were doing work on the rigged election in Ohio, which we were able to prove beyond a doubt when we came up with the architectural map, some 4 years later when Jennifer Bruner was Secretary of State, and the contract. Which we came up with that showed they planned essentially having a private network deliver the numbers, and they created a backup plan 14 months before the 2004 election. So with that's happening, that same crew of people, Manafort, Michael Connell, they also were doing work after, the election that was being stolen for the pro-Russian forces in 04, and they moved in to really handle the elections there in 04 and the ones the next few elections, which allowed the pro-Putin person to take office.
Mind-boggling. And then Michael Connell, who helped rig the Ohio election, was involved in that, right?
Yeah, he was working with, it was sort of a consortium. He was your IT guy. He was the master of the interface, you know, how you get, different computer systems. Like, say, for example, which they planned 14 months in advance, the Ohio supercomputers suddenly go down for the first time in history after you sent the IT guy home at 9 p.m. On election night, how you then could get your results in a site, a mere oversight that is calculating all the votes also, but takes over when the Ohio system comes down. So, yeah, that was Michael Connell. And Manafort was doing a lot of the PR and packaging, of course, working in Ohio and later working in the Ukraine.
Unbelievable. So I wonder if any of that is going to come out in these hearings on this latest little Ukrainian whoop-de-doo here. I mean, that'll be interesting. I was actually at a gathering with Adam Schiff on Sunday, and the first thing I urged him to do was to start referring to Trump as Fredo. He didn't understand what I was getting at, but I think you guys probably know who Fredo is and how Trump would. Bob, what do you think Trump would do if Adam Schiff referred to him as Fredo?
Well, he would probably hope that Adam Schiff didn't kiss him, which would be the kiss of death or banishment. If we were going back to The Godfather 2, I'm assuming, which,
right.
Again, you know, Noam Chomsky, among others, including myself, argue if you wanted to watch one movie to understand U.S. foreign policy and U.S. politics in general, it would be The Godfather 2.
Yeah, well, maybe Trump will go out in a rowboat with Adam Schiff, and we'll see who comes back. Kevin Camps, this whole impeachment thing, is it having any impact on the nuclear issue?
Oh, you know, gridlock in Congress is often our friend and distractions. But the thing is, you know, as we're talking about this impeachment inquiry, guess what's happening on the House side tomorrow morning? They're holding an Energy and Commerce Committee subcommittee on environment and climate change, and they're marking up the Shimkus bill, this radioactive waste bill that would speed open the Yucca dump, expand how much waste can be buried there, and legalize consolidated interim storage facilities. So while the country is fixated on Trump's impeachment inquiry, the nuclear lobbyists are getting their way on the House side. So we have to stay vigilant on our issues, even as chaos spews.
Yeah, that'll still have to go to the Senate, I assume.
Yeah, and I think they've got a uphill fight in the House. So many different committees want a piece of that bill that just because the one committee's moving doesn't mean the other ones will. But yes, the Senate side too. And Nevada, to its credit, for 32 years now, has fought tooth and nail against the Yucca dump. And New Mexico, to its credit, turned blue on the last election, last November. That helps in our fight against consolidated interim storage. And incredibly enough, even Republican Ruby Red Texas, the governor, Abbott, and even Cornyn, the number two Republican in the U.S. Senate, seem to have some bad feelings towards waste control specialists, which is really putting the brakes on the high-level waste parking lot dump proposed there. So we have some advantages coming our way. We have to really work it, though, because these fights are very much on.
Wow. All right, so let's go to the politics of the impeachment here. There are those who believe, we're going to run out of time soon. So Kevin Camps, please identify yourself, tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, our website at Beyond Nuclear is simply beyondnuclear.org, and you can read about all these issues.
And Bob Fetrakis, how do people get a hold of you?
Best place, freepress.org.
All right. So my feeling, there are those out here saying that the impeachment is going to backfire and that they're, you know, the Senate's going to turn him down and Trump will run and say, oh, I was acquitted. But I read a piece by Ryan Grimm, who basically said that the grassroots have been going nuts and that the corporate Democrats, a lot of them now, because they drag their feet on impeachment, are going to get primaried, which is great as far as I'm concerned. And I do also think, you know, that Nancy Pelosi having dragged her feet all this time, it does give a little more credibility to the impeachment, you know, that they did take their time, but we'll see Rob Strickland, Bob, in Ohio, has been supporting Trump all the way. Has he wavered at all in his continued support for the lobster in chief here?
Are you talking about Portman or?
I mean, I'm sorry, Rob Portman. I always call him Portman, the senator.
No, he hasn't wavered yet, but oddly, the governor, DeWine, you know, has sort of hemmed and hawed and hasn't been real enthusiastic about Trump.
Wow.
But, you know, Portman, you know, which would be a key, you know, is he's still with Trump. And again, I believe that they think this could work to his advantage. But it really depends on, you know, what comes out, what they investigate, and how good a job they do. But again, I mean, the key is, you know, what did this whistleblower say?
Yeah, but then they got to get into other issues. I mean, that's the key here. I mean, you know, I got to say that the Democrats, of course, Schiff and Jerry Nadler have been really wimpy. You know, they laid back and they let Mueller do nothing, essentially. And the key to the whole thing, and I remember this very clearly, and Bob, you too, when the Mueller report first was going to start, Steve Bannon, of all people, gave an interview and said that money laundering would be Trump's downfall. And I think he assumed, like many of the rest of us, that Mueller was going to look in to Trump's money laundering, and he didn't do it. I asked Adam Schiff about this Sunday night, and I said, hey, man, you know, what about money laundering? And he says, oh, yeah, we're looking into it. But then the question is,
well, it's the original sin, and it's what everyone knows. It's what every major news organization in America has already written about in detail in the connections to the Deutsche Bank. And again, it, to a large extent, I believe what Putin has on Trump.
Right. So where is the movement? I mean, I assume that an impeachment inquiry is not necessarily limited to a specific charge here. And if they want to, if they have, you know, the chutzpah to do it, that Nadler and Schiff and the other committees, Maxine Waters has a committee, right? And if anybody hates Donald Trump, it's Maxine Waters. I mean, they got to jump the fence here and get into the money laundering, or we're going to, you know, I don't think the American people are really going to relate too much to this Ukrainian thing, but money laundering, I think they will. And let's hope to God. And I've had both Robert K. Johnston and Craig Unger on this show to talk about Trump's long history of money laundering. And let's hope that they get into it. I mean, the good news is we're far enough out. It's still just September. We've got more than a year to go to the election. And I don't know. We're finally jumping into impeachment, I think, is a big deal. So let's hope that the Democrats really show some backbone here and jump in.
But again, they didn't jump in. They were forced in by a intelligence whistleblower, which and it's also interesting, a lot of the people on the fence in the Democratic Party, many of those in those swing districts were women, of course, who had backgrounds in intelligence and the military, and now shifted.
They've now shifted, and there's quite a few people on the Democratic side with backgrounds in military intelligence. So the question is, I'm going to put it right here, the question is, will the money laundering that Donald Trump did in the 1980s and 90s for the Russian mobsters that have given him, given his complete control over to Vladimir Putin, will that finally come out? Bob, what do you think?
Well, I don't know how it doesn't come out if they're actually doing their job, because if they're not, they're committing suicide politically for the Democratic Party.
Well, that's been, we've seen that before. We saw it in 2000. We saw it in 2004. We saw it in 2016. Kevin, as they say, is this good for the nuclear industry, the impeachment? Where do you think it's going to go for the future of energy?
I just wanted to, you know, praise Elijah Cummings, the chair of government oversight and reform, because he's going after Trump on a nuclear scandal. Trump going around Congress to transfer nuclear power technology to Saudi Arabia, which they can use for nuclear weapons. Uranium enrichment, plutonium reprocessing can be used for nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia's crown prince has come right out and said it, that if Iran goes into nuclear weapons, we'll be right on their heels. And the craziest part of the scandal is that Jared Kushner, his family got bailed out by the same company that owns Westinghouse Nuclear. So,
unbelievable. Hey, you guys have been great. A fascinating hour. Thank you, Jesse in New York, and we'll see you next week in Solartopia during the impeachment.
Solartopia, 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 don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.